Welcome to the Supported Living Property Podcast with your host, me, Lisa Brown, the place to learn about supported living property investing.
In this episode, Alice Nook shares how a personal experience of autism led her and her sisters to form their company, The Business of Autism. She explains some of the misconceptions around autism and discusses her thoughts on property requirements for people with autism.
Hi, Alice. It's great to have you here today. Thank you for coming. How are you?
I'm really good, thank you, actually. I think ready to get back to normal, but apart from that, I'm all good.
Good. Do you want to introduce yourself and tell people a little bit about you?
Yeah, okay. So I'm Alice Nock, and I suppose if I just give you a little bit of background on me, I graduated from university with a law degree many years ago, had a baby halfway through, which was interesting, but made me even more determined to get my degree, which I did. I then went into training to be a primary school teacher and taught for about 10 years, specialising in special educational needs and disability. And quite specifically autism. So if there were children who were autistic, they tended to be put into my class because I knew how to get the best out of them, how to work with them. Left teaching, oh gosh, probably 7 years or so ago. Dropped into a job putting teachers into primary schools for a little bit in a teacher training agency. It was a small business, so I took over the primary school side of the business and grew that from about 26,000 to about 280,000 in 18 months. So that was quite good fun, nothing I'd ever done before. And yeah, it was interesting. It was good. And then got to the point where I thought, do you know what? I've really wanted to do property investing and developing for years and years and years. And we bought our first buy to let in 2012. So one day I just decided to leave with no job and jump into property investing, which was interesting. Did two quite quirky property deals in my first sort of 6 weeks of leaving work, which I was really lucky because they gave me enough money to live on for 12 months to be able to get myself off the ground. And then about 2.5 years ago, myself and my sisters sat down and said, right, you know, we've got all this personal professional knowledge around autism, loads of experience. We know that there is a massive gap, especially in employment, around support for employers, not just the employees themselves, but actually talking to employers and saying, you know, what do you need to do to be able to support autistic employees, advertise and get, you know, the really good talent for the roles, etc. And at the time I was building houses, my sister was baking wedding cakes. And we said, this is silly. We really need to use this knowledge that we've got to try and change things. You know, at the time, the statistics around autism and employment were really poor. And actually, the most recent ones are really bad. I think it's only 22% of autistic adults are in any kind of paid employment. Goodness. Which for us was shocking. Mm. You know, and we just said, we've got to work out why this is and try and make this change. This is not fair, you know. So we set up the Business of Autism, and we've run that for the last 2.5 years. And more recently, I think one of the reasons that we ended up chatting was because I'm really interested in trying to provide some really good supported living accommodation for people and families who are autistic. So yeah, that's probably about it in a nutshell. So
much experience. I think, you know, what you're doing with the Business of Autism is really interesting. Do you want to talk a little bit about the experience of both of your sisters and what the three of you bring together? You've obviously got a really clear background, but both your sisters
So my middle sister, I think my younger sister was diagnosed with autism when she was 8. And she's 29 now. Mm. Quite big age gaps between us. So when she was diagnosed, both myself and my middle sister were quite a lot older. So we had a really good understanding of what was going on. And we could really see what my mum and dad had to do to help my younger sister to achieve. So I think both me and my middle sister at that point kind of became interested naturally in autism and people who were different and thought differently and had different needs and different talents and skills. And my middle sister went off and did a degree in autism. She was set up one of the first autism bases attached to a mainstream primary school in the UK for autistic children, which was absolutely fantastic and challenging and lovely, all rolled into one. And then she went on to work for Kent Social Services, supporting adults in the community, and making sure that they've got everything that they needed to support them. Lucy's journey is extraordinary, I think. She's a very talented young lady, incredibly caring, thoughtful, and a very, very lovely, lovely girl. I know I'm very biased because she's my sister. But I think what we saw with Lucy was that my mum and dad had to work really hard when she was at school and college and even at university to make sure that the lecturers and the teachers and the tutors understood her and her needs and how to get the best out of her. And that was an ongoing battle, I suppose, for them. But they did it, and she did very, very well. And she graduated from university. And then she got an internship. She applied for an internship with hundreds of other people. And she got it, which was great. She never told her employer she was autistic. She then moved jobs a couple of years later. Again, went straight for interview, got the job, no problem at all. Again, never told her employer she was autistic. And I think she had issues at work anyway. I think there were problems anyway, which were nothing to do with her being autistic, but I think possibly had they have had much better knowledge and understanding of autism and Lucy, then she probably would have got much more support and would have felt much more comfortable in the role that she was in. She more recently took on a role, probably about 18 months ago now, and she for the first time decided, once she'd taken the role, to tell her employer. She was in a company where she felt valued and she was listened to. And they've been brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And I think she's probably had about 3 promotions since she's been there. She's carved out her own job role, but that is because her employer has made the effort to learn about what autism is and learn about how beneficial it can be to have a real diverse workforce, you know, and not just to employ people who think the same. Because if you employ people who think the same, you get the same result day in, day out, and nothing ever changes. So Lucy's done really well for herself, but it hasn't been without challenges. And I know that definitely since we set up the business, she's learned a lot about herself. Mm. In particular, that a lot of the ways that she feels and thinks are because she's autistic. And she never realised that because she thought everybody felt and behaved in that way.
Right.
And she had no idea that was because she was autistic. So yeah, so it's been quite a journey, really. But again, in a nutshell, that's a bit about both of them and us as a business. So
yeah, absolutely, because I think that really sets the background to what you're doing and what you're trying to achieve, really. I guess the obvious question is, what is autism, isn't it, for people who are listening? And I think there's a lot of misunderstanding around what autism actually is, Alice, isn't there?
Yeah, massive misconceptions. And I think this is the biggest problem, because people only know what autism is from their own experiences and from what they've seen. And it's not represented correctly very often.
No.
And often you can get a really, really bad view of what autism is. And as I said, you know, what that does is it means that employers get quite scared of trying to do it in case they get it wrong. So autism, trying to explain it in a way that is very easy to understand, it's very simply a condition that affects the way that people communicate, and it affects the way that they experience the world around them. Quite simply, there are some common autistic traits, which there would have to be, otherwise we wouldn't be able to diagnose it in the first place. But just really like you and me, everybody who's autistic is different, you know, and I think that's really important to note. You know, there's a massive stereotype around the fact that everybody who's autistic is good at IT. Yes, there are a lot of autistic people out there who are good at IT, but there are a lot out there who are good at lots of other things instead. You know, they're good at sciences and technology and the arts and law and everything else. So, you know, people who are autistic are all different. I think it's quite important to note that one of the things that people talk about when it comes to autism is that autism is a spectrum condition. And that doesn't mean that it's linear. That doesn't mean that it starts here and finishes here. You know, it's a variant, it's variable. So you don't start at low and end at high. It's more like a circle. So yeah, definitely not linear. I think when it comes to talking about how people live that are autistic, many autistics live totally independently. They have partners and families and pets and houses and jobs, just like everybody else. But there are some autistic individuals who do have additional challenges, and this could be learning difficulties, learning disabilities. And at that point, that's when people who are autistic might require a different level of support. Yeah, I think probably that pretty much describes what autism is. I think, as I said, it's really important to note that everybody who's autistic is different. And it's really important to ask people who are autistic what their talents are, what their skills are, and what support they might need, what their needs are, rather than just making assumptions.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you have that experience, one experience, and you think that's what everybody's going to be like, you're coming with that preconceived idea, aren't you, that this is how I treat somebody who has autism, or, you know, and as you say, there's such a variety of different needs underneath that umbrella term.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest problems that people come across is that autism is actually an invisible condition. Mm. You can't tell when somebody's autistic. But you can tell when somebody's got a learning disability or if they're physically disabled. And that can often come hand in hand with autism. So the assumption, therefore, is that everybody who is autistic has a learning difficulty or a learning disability or a physical disability. And that's not the case. No. You know, my sister is autistic. She doesn't have any other learning difficulties or disabilities, which means her condition is invisible until there's an issue or a problem.
Yeah, as evidenced by the fact she's done, what, two big jobs without ever telling anyone that she had autism. Yeah, absolutely. So I guess, why do people need to be aware of autism? Why is it important that we're aware of autism?
I think, again, like I said, because it's an invisible condition, is really difficult for lots of people because you just simply don't know. You know, if somebody's in a wheelchair, you know that they've got additional needs because you can physically see it. People who hold down really good jobs, have fantastic skills and talents, often can struggle with really basic living needs. So they can struggle with eating the right diet, cooking, cleaning, general health and care can be quite difficult. That can be sometimes because some people who are autistic, it affects their senses. So it can mean that noises are much louder than they would be for me and you. It might be that smells are much stronger, or it might be that those senses are dulled in some way, which means that they need extra stimulation. So this can cause challenges within the workplace. It can cause challenges when you're living at home, because sometimes those places aren't set up for people who are autistic. So yeah, I think it's really important to have an understanding of the fact that it is an invisible condition, but doesn't mean to say that those people haven't still got those additional needs and need those adaptions. Also, what often happens is people who are autistic who have different needs and needs adaptions, or, you know, reasonable adjustments made for them, that's often seen by employers as asking for extra, which it's not. You know, because just like you or me, for example, my husband has worked from home for the last 18 months, obviously, because he hasn't been able to go into work. And one of the first things that he requested was, he said, I need a proper chair at home, because if I don't have a proper chair, I'm going to be crippled. My back is going to be terrible. Now, that he needs that to do his job, in the same way that somebody who's autistic might need to sit in a quiet area within an office. They might need noise cancelling headphones. In accommodation, they might need different lighting, or, you know, other things that would suit them specifically. So,
I mean, that feeds really nicely into the property stuff, doesn't it? And a lot of the property that we're talking about with supported living and autism are often people who have that dual diagnosis of autism and learning disabilities, who've got that more severe need, who need more support, and maybe some adapted properties. you know, and there's a whole range of different things, aren't there, around the property requirements of people who have those needs?
I think that is the biggest challenge, is that most supported living and most accommodation is set up for people who have physical disabilities or mental health needs. Now, the issue that you've got there is people who are autistic, they don't want to be seen as special necessarily. They don't want to have to ask for extra. They want to live quite normal, independent lives. And so they don't need homes that are set up for people that are disabled, physically disabled. Mm. And they don't necessarily want to be bunched in with people that are different, that don't think like them. You know, I think it's really important that there's an awful lot of stigma around supported living. Mm. Just like years and years ago, what we know now as HMOs that were then bedsits. And, you know, if you ask anybody in the 70s if they'd live in a bedsit, they'd probably say absolutely not, you know, because, you know, what we think of as a bedsit is sort of like, you know, tobacco stained, nicotine stained walls and, you know, dripping taps and broken boilers. Yeah. Yet we know now that HMOs are just like hotels.
Some of them are amazing, absolutely, yeah.
And I think the problem is with supported living is there's still so much stigma around it that people who are autistic sort of say, I don't want to be lumped in, I don't want to be. But actually, I find that the people, just from my personal experience and speaking to people who are autistic, who have got jobs, who are more than capable, they do still live at home with their parents. Mm. Partly because they need that extra support at home with their daily routines. Partly because their parents have wrapped them in cotton wool, because they've had to really fight and battle for them over the years. And it's very difficult for the parents to then let them go, not just to live independently, but to live independently financially.
Yeah.
Because often parents keep control of all of that because it's the only way that they know how to protect their children. Mm. So I think we need to start thinking more about what the future might look like. You know, I know a girl who I've known for many, many years who is a little bit older than me, and she has a daughter and she's autistic. Her daughter's autistic. Now, they live on their own because luckily they've got the financial support from her dad. Mm. But I know for a fact that if they'd been able to go into supported living when her daughter was younger, because she's 11 or 12 now, and been around people that she felt comfortable with, that understood her, where she could understand them, that she probably have moved on a lot. And definitely her daughter would be in a different position now in terms of where they're in, because they need huge amounts of support, huge amounts of support. So I think it's about looking how we actually make a change to supported accommodation so that it doesn't have that stigma around it, so that it isn't segregation, it's integration, and it builds up a community of like-minded people where they can have a very basic level of support, and that might be just somebody popping in the morning to say, are you up, are you okay, are you grabbing your breakfast? Or it might be somebody that pops in two or three times a day to make sure that you're doing that throughout the day. I think people who are autistic find pets very beneficial, and a lot of supporting living providers won't allow pets. And again, you know, that's part of someone's life. So I think it's looking at making some changes now to how we can start to do the whole changing from a bedsit to a really posh HMO. We can start to do that with supported living. Now, the only way that we're going to do that is to talk to the autistic community and say, what do you want? You know, we can't make those decisions. I'm not autistic. I've got lots of experience, personal and professional, but I'm not autistic. You know, so we have to sit down and we have to work with people who are autistic and say, what is going to work for you?
And it's so personal as well, isn't it, Alice? You can't say this is what will work for everybody. It's what does this individual need?
It is. But you can start with a baseline, and you can start with thinking about things like what kind of lighting you're going to put into a building. You know, because you can have dimmable lighting. Now, that's not always put in because it's a bit more expensive, but hugely beneficial to somebody who's autistic. People who become overwhelmed when they're autistic can often hear the electricity running through the wires. Now, that just seems absolute madness to me, but I know that if I could constantly hear that, that would drive me mad. You know, and especially if I was feeling overwhelmed. So I think looking at how we insulate better, looking at noise levels, and as I said, looking at the people that are around them and whether they're best suited to living together.
Absolutely. Compatibility is massive in supporting
Huge. You know,
teams, they have to,
and a really good way to do that is to say, right, okay, we'll set up supported living, but what we'll do is we'll provide community groups first, and we'll actually start to interact together with people so that they can say, actually, we don't work very well together, or actually, do you know what, this is brilliant, we'd love to all jump into a block of apartments together and go and live together. And I think that's a really good way to do it, because, you know, I wouldn't want to live with somebody that I didn't get on with, or that was causing problems, or that didn't understand me. So
It's so important. Your home is so important, isn't it?
It's a safe place, isn't it? You know, it's a safe place. It's a haven. It's where we come back to, you know, it's where we rest. It's where we relax. And yeah, you've got to feel really, really comfortable there. And not just in the home, you've got to feel comfortable in the outside environment around as well, you know, in terms of transport and where you can get to easily. If you work, you know, I know that my friend who I talked about, they did look at supported living for her, and the closest place that was going to be suitable was 2.5 hours away from her family. Which is madness. And they just said, well, we haven't got anything else. Things have got to change. They are.
We just need a lot more property, quite frankly, don't we? It's a lot more available property for providers to use, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So that you don't have to make that decision about being such a long way from friends and family, you know. It's really, really important, that, I think. Mm. What considerations do people need to think about if they're working with people with autism, or they're supporting people with autism? Anything else that we haven't covered that you think needs to be brought in?
I think, like I said, the main ones are, don't make assumptions.
Mm.
Never assume what somebody's needs are. Because, you know, they are all very, very different. And always make sure that you actually work with the autistic community. Mm. So, you know, I am in a couple of groups on Facebook, which admittedly you can only go into if you're either autistic or have a family member who's autistic. But there are groups out there. There's the National Autistic Society. There's an awful lot of information out there. And there's a lot of people like us who are more than happy to consult and to be able to give support and advice and knowledge to make sure that you get it right, or as right as you can get it. You're not always going to get it right. And it's really important to know that if something doesn't work, you can change it.
Yeah.
You know, but it's giving the opportunity on a regular basis for those people who are living in that accommodation to say to them, is there anything else that you need? Is this working for you? What can we do to make changes? You know, it's not static, you know, things change, and you've got to be aware of that. And I think, again, it's not providing accommodation on a shoestring. You know, it's making sure that if you've got funding and resources available to you, that they are used in the best possible way. So, yeah, I think that's the most important thing, really, is just do your research and speak to actual autistic adults.
That's brilliant. Thank you.
They will tell you what they need.
I always ask about any advice or tips specifically for property investors, Alice. I don't know if there's anything else you want to add in there.
I've got two, both from experience.
This is property investor head on, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the main one is definitely saying, do not go and do something that you don't know how to do. You know, you are always going to do better and do things more quickly if you work with people that know what they're doing. So I think that's really important. You've got to bring something to the table yourself. You know, I get people message me who I don't know, asking if they can have a chat. And the amount of phone calls I've had with people that say, no, I haven't got any money and I don't know anything about property, but I've seen a 15-bed HMO that I'd like to buy. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, that's a very familiar.
You know, and that's a really common one. But on the back of that, it's also very easy to then find those people that know what they're doing with the knowledge and leave them to get on with it, you know. And I think it's really important to delegate and not abdicate. And it's really, really easy to just say, off you go. But ultimately, if it's your development and it's your property and it's your investment, whether that is buy to let, HMO, supported living, whatever that is, ultimately it is your responsibility to get that right.
Mm.
You know, it is your responsibility to be compliant. it is your responsibility to make sure all the insurance is in place and that your tenants are safe, whoever they may be. And as I said, I have had my fingers burned from having a lovely builder come along to build a house for me, and he was very charming and he had all of this knowledge, and I let him get on with it, and I won't go into detail, but it didn't go to plan.
Oh dear.
yeah, always keep an eye on everything, really, really good eye on everything that's going on. Always do your checks on people and make sure that they are who they say they are. Again, there's a lot of property training out there at the moment. It's not regulated. So you could end up with people who have never bought their own property. I know someone who is very, very lovely. Him and his wife, very lovely couple, very good friends of mine. And he has written a book on property investing, but I know for a fact that he's never bought a property. You know, and so we just got to be really careful to do your research. Property is a great thing to do. It's, you don't become a millionaire overnight. It's not passive investment, whatever anybody says. It is absolutely not passive income, unless you literally are an armchair investor and you hand your money to someone and have it back at the end. But that's not property development. Or so, yeah, do your research, get it right, be as hands-on as you can, and don't abdicate. Just do a bit of delegating and you'll be all right.
Brilliant. Thank you, Alice. It's been great chatting to you today.
Oh, it's been really lovely to talk to you, Lisa. Thank you so much for having me on.